The scripture reading for this morning comes from the 11th chapter of the Gospel according to John. This is the story of Jesus raising Lazarus from death. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go up to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and are you going to go there again?" Jesus answered, Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble because the light is not in them." After saying this, he told him, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he'll be all right." Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but he thought that he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I'm glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that God will give whatever you ask of him." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, though they die, yet will they live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, "The teacher is here and calling for you." And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but still was at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in her house, consoling her, saw Mary get up quickly and went out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench because he's been dead for 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, But I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he said this, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." Let me tell you about an experience that I had a number of years ago. Actually, close to 20 years now that I think of it. We had a phone call one morning, about 6 in the morning. It was from one of our active members. And he had called to tell me that the 12-year-old son of one of the families in the church had died in his sleep. So I went down immediately and spent the better part of the morning with the family and learned a little bit over the next few days as to what had happened. Apparently, the boy had not felt well the last couple of days. I actually saw him the night before he died at a concert at the middle school where one of my kids was playing in the concert. So he'd had kind of flu-like symptoms, and his mother gave him some Tylenol and put him to bed. And when he didn't come down for school in the morning, she went up and found him dead in his bed. It turns out, and this came out about a week or so later, that what had happened was that he had died of an exceptionally rare type of virus. I don't remember what the name of the virus was. It was some complicated name in Latin and Greek. But it's so rare that only apparently 2 or 3 cases happen every year in the United States. The virus attacked his heart muscle and caused him to have an enlarged heart. So he basically died of a heart attack, is what happened. And so we had the service, and that was a difficult one to do. I usually find that services for children in particular are the hardest to get through. And I remind myself that for me, my discomfort is only going to be for the time that I'm doing the service, but for that family, of course, they live with that loss for the rest of their lives, and this family certainly has. This was totally unexpected, and you can imagine all the conflicted feelings that everybody had. The parents felt guilty. If we had known that he had this particular virus, their doctor had told them that he probably could have had an emergency heart transplant and survived. But by the time that, obviously, that he died, it was too late. There was anger toward God. Why did God allow this to happen? He was a perfectly good kid. He was a nice kid. Why would this happen? And so all of these emotions were all wrapped up. In a church about this size, we had, I'd say we had close to 400 people. Kids lining the sides on the from the soccer team that he was on. Just an amazingly tragic thing. And the question, of course, in people's minds was, where was God? When I work with families that have had a death, one of the things that becomes apparent almost every time is that when we experience the death of someone we love, especially a sudden and unexpected death like the death of a child or somebody who is younger, we realize our own mortality. We realize that what we think are the firm foundations of our own existence really are not all that terribly firm, and things can change in the blink of an eye. Lazarus' family undoubtedly experienced all of those feelings, and certainly as we hear both Martha and Mary, especially Martha, who comes out, and from the sounds of it, you can almost see the tone of her voice in the text. She's just about ready to punch Jesus in the gut because he wasn't there in time. We don't know exactly why it is. I mean, even though Jesus says that this was for the glory of God, practically speaking, it may be that he didn't think Lazarus was all that sick and then realized, oh, maybe he was really that sick. But there they were. And obviously, Jesus was close to Lazarus and felt his loss. There are really two levels to this story, and this is often true in the stories that we find in John's Gospel. There's the narrative of what happens, but then there's another level. So I want to think about both of those. And the obvious one, of course, is Lazarus' death. The Jewish belief was that the soul hovered around the body for 3 days when a person died, and that on the fourth day, the person was really, truly dead. So think about Easter. Remember 3 days in the tomb? So they know that he is really dead. And when Jesus tells them to remove the stone, the first thing that they think of is, it's got to smell. And, you know, there aren't very many times now when I go back to the King James Bible, but the phrase, the way this is worded in the King James Bible is just absolutely priceless. There's nothing like juicy Elizabethan language. But Lord, by this time, he stinketh. So they realized that he was really dead. We don't know the exact details of what happened with all of this. It's possible that Lazarus may not have actually been dead, may have been in a coma. It's possible. We don't know. So the best we can do is just simply take the story at face value as it was understood. This story about the raising of Lazarus is one of 7 miracles and other events that happened that the first part of John's Gospel is structured around. Some scholars think that this may have been the nucleus around which the Gospel of John was written, that these stories may have been preserved as a grouping, and that the first half of the Gospel of John expanded around it. The second half is the Passion story, which is actually much longer than it is in the other Gospels because of the long discourses that Jesus has. And in John's Gospel, the miracles, such as the raising of Lazarus or the feeding of the, I think it's in John's 4,000 or 6,000, I can't quite remember, and the healing of the blind man and so forth, they're not just miracles. In the other 3 Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the way the stories are told of the many healings that Jesus does and miracles is they simply happen, and it often happens that the person will ask or somebody will ask on their behalf, Lord, would you heal me? Or Jesus asks them, do you want to be healed? Interestingly, in the miracles that happen in John, generally, the person doesn't ask. So if you think back about the blind man that we heard about, was that last week? Yeah. He doesn't ask to be healed. Jesus simply heals him. Lazarus and his family don't ask that Jesus bring him back to life, but he does. These are called signs. They indicate something about who Jesus is. And what they indicate that the divine has invaded our existence. Especially in our world, we tend to look at everything in a rather rational way. If something unexpected happens, the first thing, of course, that we do is try to find a rational explanation for it. And doesn't that get you mad when something really weird happens and you can't come up with a rational explanation for it? We all know that. Each of these signs, and certainly the raising of Lazarus, is a window. It's a window into a deeper truth. And it gives Jesus the opportunity to offer another one of a series of statements that are in John's Gospel, and only in John, where he says, I am something, or different things. I am the bread of life. I am the door of the sheepfold. I am the light of the world, from chapter 9. In this passage, I am the resurrection and the life. And the I am, referring back to the Hebrew name for God. This story is very much about faith. It's about seeing beyond our circumstances as they are and seeing how God invades our existence. Martha and Mary and those who have come to mourn, of course, accept Lazarus' death for what it is. Martha is angry. If you'd been here, my brother would still be alive. Mary doesn't seem to be quite that angry, although maybe she was doing a sort of a passive-aggressive thing. We don't know. They're upset. Their brother has died. Perhaps Jesus could have healed him. And Jesus' response is a phrase that I'd have to say, I think for most of the funerals that I've done, and I've done probably close to 300 of them, the phrase, I am the resurrection and the life, those who believe in me, that though they die, yet shall they live, and whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. A reminder that what we experience here on earth is not the end of the story, not by a long stretch. The reality of death will challenge our faith. We know that. And we are reminded in death of others of our own mortality. We all know that we have to die, but I think probably many of us assume that an exception is going to be made in our case, right? Yeah, well, of course. There was an old song that perhaps some of you have heard. It's kind of out of the barbershop quartet tradition. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Anybody ever heard that song? It's a great song. It's wonderful. But this story is not just about the death of a loved one. It's also about our death, but not so much our physical death. The story about Lazarus is also about discipleship. Think back in the Gospels how many times Jesus says, in reference to discipleship, take up your cross and follow me. Remember where he says that several times? Take up your cross and follow me. The cross at the time is not a religious symbol. It was an instrument of death. It was an instrument of execution. And a very ugly one at that. Take up your cross and follow me. Discipleship for Jesus, as he defines it, is taking up a cross. Probably understood that in years to come, people would be executed because of their faith, but it's also about dying to ourselves. Not literally dying, but dying to ourselves. For Jesus, discipleship, taking up our cross and following him, is leaving behind the life that we live when we live simply for ourselves. Where we move past the level of existence that is simply what's in it for me. We've probably all known people that seem to live like that. They just don't really do anything for others, and everything is about accumulating money or whatever. When Jesus calls us to discipleship, he's calling us away from a life that is simply a matter of accumulating stuff for ourselves, to move away from thinking that whenever we do something, that there has to be something in it for us. Now, I know that many of you have children, and perhaps you've probably heard me say this before, but you know, when your children get to the point where they realize that they're not the center of the world, isn't that a sort of a revelatory moment when your kids realize that? Now, I've known some adults that still haven't gotten to that stage. I mean, we probably all have people that think somehow that they're the center of the world. But here's the problem. If you're the center of the world, and you're the center of the world, and you're the center of the world, and I'm the center of the world, it doesn't work like that. It's true that just in our daily lives, a sign of maturity is realizing that everything doesn't revolve around us. But as disciples, what we learn is everything isn't always about us. I knew a colleague once that preached a sermon at an ordination, and it's a title. I've never preached at an ordination, but I would love to someday. And the title of the sermon will be, "It's Not About You." It's not about you. As disciples, we learn that what Jesus calls us to is beyond an existence that may be very comfortable and something you don't really want to leave, where your life becomes one of service. It doesn't mean you have to become like Mother Teresa and sell everything you have and go live with the poor, although some are called to do that. And that's a perfectly good thing. But not everybody's called to do that. The important thing is, what's the reason that we live? Is it just for ourselves? Or is it to serve all of God's children in whatever way we can? This is dying to ourselves, and that can be really difficult to give up because it feels so good. So as we approach Easter in just a couple of weeks, think about the raising of Lazarus. I have to believe that somehow in the mind of the person that recorded this story, that there are so many references to the resurrection of Jesus, aren't there? About rolling away the stone, expecting that the body is going to be there. Of course, with Lazarus it is. And there's a big difference there. But it sort of prefigures what happens on Easter when they expect to see the body and it's not there. But there's something that has to happen before Easter. And that is that between Maundy Thursday and Easter morning, Jesus has to die. So think about how you might observe Holy Week. We'll have some opportunities here at the church. Come on Good Friday and spend a little time in contemplation if you can. Or go to a Good Friday service at another church if you know of a congregation that's offering one. Don't skip over Good Friday, because it helps you understand the resurrection so much better. And let us remember above all that just as Jesus modeled in his own death, the reason for our living is not just for us. It's not about us. It's about serving the people of God, all of God's children, no matter who they are or where they are. This is what we're called to do as disciples. Amen.